Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We are getting ever so closer to the end of the season. Match day 21 has just gone and we'll be looking at all the action from the weekend. We would have liked to have got this done earlier in the week. However, alongside me, Eva wasn't feeling too well, so we decided to prolong it a little bit to the middle of the week. Eva, how are you feeling?
Well, you could say that that game on Monday night and the endorphins that came with it kind of got me feeling a bit better. So I'm glad I can be back and sorry for the delay, but it wouldn't have been a good episode with me on it. So thanks to Matthew, of course, for delaying it to today. And I'm sure the Zweite Bundesliga has a lot of reason for not me getting sick again. So that's good.
Yeah, unlike the players who are having to play unbelievable amounts of games in a short amount of week, we care about the individuals on this podcast. And, you know, whenever everyone's match fit, then we carry on. And we're going to start, instead of looking at the teams that are at the top, even though we do have a inglorious three-way tie, for the lead of the Zweite Bundesliga, we're going to look at the teams at the bottom as the race to avoid relegation continues to heat up. One of those teams that currently occupies a bottom three spot is Sandhausen, and they hosted Karlsruhe on the weekend, and it was all looking so good. 2-0 early on before halftime, Kevin Behrens and Patrick Schmidt getting in the goals, and then they completely fell apart in the second half. Philip Hoffmann scoring literally moments after the second half kickoff, and then Kyung-Rok Choi scoring a brace in the second half to give Karlsruhe all 3 points, and it keeps them just in the mix of as a chasing member. What it meant for Sandhausen is that Mikael Schiele, for the second time this season, has been sacked. Stefan Kulewitz and Gerhard Klippinger will take charge of their game this week. Eva, you know, Sandhausen have been very so-so this season. Normally they are one of the stable clubs that avoids relegation, but, you know, doesn't do a lot else, except maybe a couple of upsets here and there. You know, this was a golden opportunity, and their first half was very solid, but they completely fell apart in the second.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I thought, I was kind of impressed with Sandhausen's first half. Really liked how they put pressure on Karlsruhe. For example, with Bachmann nearly scoring at the beginning, and then of course Kassi's defending against Behrens was a bit atrocious. If there is one player you need to watch out for in that Sandhausen team, it's definitely Kevin Behrens, and it looked a bit silly if you look at the situation. Good shot by Patrick Schmidt as well. You had the feeling he was kind of putting all this anger in that shot, and of course, if you not manage to be awake that much when it comes into the second half, and Karlsruhe just has the quality to use their chances, we've seen it a couple of times in the past month that they can use their chances, may it be not a lot. I mean, if you look at the statistics, Sandhausen actually had 8 shots on target, Karlsruhe only 5. But their shots in general were a bit more dangerous, in my opinion. Really, really good teamwork by Hoffmann and Choi. And in general, you feel a bit sorry for that Sandhausen team. To be honest, do not know if a change of manager at this stage of the season really will make a difference. This so Kulewitz and Klepinger will only take charge for the next game if I read that statement correctly. It's a bit weird because if you look at that Twitter statement, of course it's in German, but they kind of say Schiele is out of the job to give new impulses. If he's not there, he can't give any kind of impulse to that or any kind of positive insight into that team. So that was a bit weird. Well, and if you look at the managers that are available at the moment, a bit difficult actually. So there are coaches at the likings of Gamotzes, which I would like to see at a different club actually, which we speak about later. But I said that off air that, for example, Jeff Sabina might be one of the coaches to look out for, although he wasn't particularly successful at Kaiserslautern, but that club is whole another topic. Might be a good one to just stabilize the team for a bit. Not completely sure. It's going to be very, very difficult, especially if you look at the teams around them that are picking up points. That's going to be a tough last part of that season for Sandhausen.
Especially with the form they are in currently. The last five is quite concerning. Surprisingly, they're not actually the team that has the worst form in the last five. We'll talk about them in a moment. A good win for Karlsruhe. It does keep them, as mentioned before, in the hunt. They're only 3 points behind Fürth in fourth, and then a further three behind the three leaders. So there's still a chance that KRC could wreak some havoc for the remainder of the season. Let's make a move to Nürnberg. They hosted St. Pauli. We mentioned last week that the club were very, very lucky, and I mean very, very lucky to win in Darmstadt. And make no mistake, they were comprehensively beaten, even though the scoreboard says 2-1 to St. Pauli. It would be an ex-de club player in Guido Burgstaller who continues his stellar goal scoring run. In the calendar year of 2021, he has 6 goals this season, and he's becoming a real figurehead of the St. Pauli side. And Omar Marmoush getting a goal off from the spot to make it 2-0. Denis Borkowski, who's on loan from RB Leipzig, he got his first goal in the Zweite Bundesliga, but it was all for nothing as Nürnberg once again go down. There was an incident in the box which we'll talk about, a very, very similar incident that happened in the Kiel game. But if you were to mirror side by side, it was quite confusing that this one wasn't given a penalty and the other one in the Kiel game was. And you could tell at the end of the game, Robert Klaus was very, very well, annoyed would be an understatement. And it would be said that he probably didn't carry himself in high esteem after the final whistle to the referee, but was maybe a bit more composed in the press conference. Eva, not great for Nürnberg. It's another loss. They've lost five of their last six, and it's as much as Klaus talks how he wants his team to play during the presser, you could argue that we're not really seeing a lot of that out on the pitch.
Yeah, speaking about momentums, you thought after that game against Darmstadt, which they won, that they were kind of using that. But to be honest, we talked about it last week, how they won that game. And at the moment, I didn't see a lot of good things for Nuremberg. I mean, they had the better chance in that game at the beginning, weren't going forward, but St. Pauli took charge very quickly, and until Nürnberg scored, there was not really a visible sign of life of them. I mean, St. Pauli made it unnecessarily close until the end because they could have scored a third goal, for example, with Dedken, I believe. But as you said in the beginning, that scoreline suggests a way closer game than it actually was. And I have to say, I'm a bit surprised that of all the teams that we will talk about that have a change of position, I thought Nuremberg would be in that mix because there is that press conference where there's a lot of chat about in especially German media because one of the journalists kind of says that he didn't really see the match plan, and then Robert Klaus goes on speaking in all, you could say, professional terms about that. which isn't a bad thing actually, because if you know the history of Klaus, where under which managers he worked under and with, it's not such an unusual thing. But well, let's say German media is a bit weird in that topic. But actually, the more interesting thing is that what he talks about, not in which terms, but you can't actually see that on the pitch. And that's probably, you have the feeling neither Klaus nor the players really know what to do in certain situations. And that is really worrying. Of course, it's difficult going back to momentums. St. Pauli is one of the teams you would not like to play against at the moment because they're in such a good form. I mean, if I'm not wrong, it's the sixth goal for Burgstaller in the sixth consecutive game. They picked up 50 points in the last six games, which is huge. So that's very difficult. But just if you look at the team that Nuremberg has, that St. Pauli has, you have the feeling that St. Pauli really turned it around Christmas. Nuremberg failed to do so. And yeah, in the end, just really disappointed performance by Nuremberg. But you could basically say this for their last 2 months.
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite interesting because both sides are really the polar opposite as Nuremberg continue to really struggle. You know, St. Pauli are making the rise and they're rising rapidly. And you did mention Burgstaller scoring in his last six games, which is an impressive feat for any striker. And he's refound his feet like he did for Nuremberg those years ago, where he was, you know, everything he touched turns into goals. And it's been vital to really the resurgence of St. Pauli, where we looked at them all questioning whether it was going to happen. And, you know, they now sit 13th and they're only, 4 points away from being in the top half. So they've had, their recovery has been very, very impressive and St. Pauli fans would be absolutely thrilled. Our last Group 1 game is Kiel and Würzburg. This game ended a 0-0, and as mentioned in the previous section, where a penalty wasn't given for a similar act. Henrik Bornmann's attempt to clear it. Now he punches the ball clear, and in the process, there's a collision with Lee Jae Sung. I you know, as much as you want to sit on the fence, I hate it as a decision. I think it's a really bad decision because I'm not sure what the keeper's supposed to do. Usually in that situation, the keeper's the one who's protected, punches the ball clear, and for some reason, it's given a penalty, which Alexander Mühling, who'd only just come on the pitch 3 minutes prior, scored his eighth goal of the season. Kiel go equal on points. It's a big loss for Würzburg, especially considering the teams around them were all beaten. But yeah, it would be a difficult pill to swallow for Würzburg, because while Kiel were probably the better side overall, when a touchy decision like that goes against you, can understand the anguish.
Yeah, definitely. I looked at that scene and I thought that there was a handball before that led to that penalty, because as you've mentioned, Bornmann basically does what he has to do as a goalkeeper without any kind of too much, I don't know, danger toward the opponent player, which was Lee in that position. And I don't really understand, because not only does he actually, like, he's touching the ball, fits the ball away. This is, like, if then we have around, I don't know, 15 penalties each match day, because that happens in every game, and that possibly can't be a penalty. And I do understand for fans from Würzburger Kickers that they might be a bit, I don't know, angry with the VAR, because if you look at that scene against Fürth, now against Kiel, and you might want to argue if there would have been a team with a bigger fan base in general, with more I don't want to be sound that negative or in any way offend Würzburg, but with bigger significance in German football. Once again, does not mean I don't think Würzburg doesn't matter for German football, but you might get what I want to say. That and if you had fans in the stadium, that would have probably been a bit different. I don't really understand, and that's once again when decision like that happen, I always tend to look at what Kalinas Erben have to say. Really highly recommend, you can probably translate all their tweets, and they try their best to do what the VAR account of the DFB should be doing, actually. And they were not really sure why this was given a penalty either, because it was, for everyone on the pitch, it was a clear mistake. You can't give that as a penalty. That's why actually the VAR has to say something. And you have to say that this penalty changed the game a bit. In my opinion, after that, Kiel was stronger, was really leaning on that high that they got from the lead. Until then, I mean, the first free shot on target was by Serra after 30 minutes. In general, that game wasn't, having a lot of shots on target. I mean, Würzburg only had really one shot on target, which, if I'm correct, was by Rich Munsey. Yeah. But it kind of, is characteristic for that game that Kiel needed a penalty to score, because before that, their shots were just not dangerous enough. And actually, Bonnmann was quite good in that game. He nearly had the penalty. You have to say that Kiel or Ole Werner didn't put Mühling and Bartels on the pitch, because they were both fearing for yellow card suspension. Funny thing is, as soon as he put Bartels on, 2 minutes after that, he got his yellow card, so that didn't work well. So he will be out for the match against Fürth, if I'm correct. In general, Würzburg could have had a point in that game, because Bonnmann was really, really good at goal. And I do understand that he was really angry after the game.
Yeah, it has to be said that, Bonnmann coming in for Giefer has been a really good change for them. It's funny, I was talking to some friends about this on Monday night, the concept of switching a keeper mid-season, and how that can sometimes, psychologically affected defense and how the team progresses. And one thing that probably Bornman does a lot better than Giefer is communication within the 18, and he really controls the area, where sometimes Giefer is a bit tentative and hesitant. And what you see is that we saw Giefer, who was still okay, but Bornman certainly looks more stable between the net. Wasn't particularly thrilled with what Bernard Traore said at the end in the press conference about it being, this is a man's game. And the Sky journo was kind of egging him on to, like, yeah, I agree. It's like silly comments. It's a game for everybody, not just for the men. But yeah, that could have been a big result. Even if they'd just gotten a point, just reduced the gap to the teams around them, they still remain 5 points away from Braunschweig, who we will talk about on the other side when they went to Bochum. Braunschweig were another team in the league searching for a victory, and a win would have actually got them out of the bottom three. However, they couldn't get it done, as they were beaten 2-0 by VfL Bochum. Amiel Belakotchap got the opening goal of the game from a set piece. And then Simon Soller gave away a penalty. His foul on Marcel Beer gave Braunschweig the opportunity to equalise. Dongwon Ji steps up, but Manuel Riemann makes an excellent save. It's ironic that Ivers player, to have a big impact, would miss a penalty by the player who would be in my current team of the season. No gloating there, but anyway. And then Danilo Suarez, who prior to his goal on 32 minutes, was in a glorious screaming match with Manuel Riemann, and there was definitely some choice words that shall not be repeated on this podcast. 2-0, game over, and Borkum really kind of held firm from there. But Eva, has to be said that the penalty miss by G certainly ensured that Borkum would have all the momentum, because prior to that, after the concession of the first goal, Braunschweig had a good period where they were really putting some pressure on.
Yeah, in general, they were kind of unlucky in that game. I mean, of course, that the biggest opportunity to score there. Good job by Riemann, but in my opinion, also not very good carrying out of the penalty by G. Then shortly after that, I think it was Gamboa who was trying to pass back to Riemann, but the ball got lost a bit and Bär could have used that mistake. So at this stage, later in the first half, they were nearly able to score. And then I think shortly after that, Suarez scored. So that meant all hopes gone for Braunschweig. I really want to point out two things here. First of all, that Braunschweig's defense is really worrying me. I mean, that free kick, I think it was actually Brian Behrendt who was presumably Amabella Kotschup's opponent. Yep. And he's completely losing sight of him in that situation. And once again, Braunschweig and the first 50 minutes, we had Valentine's Day on the weekend. This is still a better love story than Twilight, you have to say. The amounts of goals they concede in this first 50 minutes this season is highly worrying. And you do have the feeling it has something to do with them thinking they have enough time to get into that game, trying to figure out what the opponent is at. And teams like Bochum will use that. They will use that laziness immediately. And that's what you saw in that game. And speaking about gloating of players of the of the season or so far, I really want to point out Jules' performance here. He really got his 17th and 18th scorer point in that game, and he could nearly put the cherry on top with his with a goal himself. Really, really good work by him. He was the reason why Kotschup and Daniele Suarez scored in this game, and I thought that he was one of the best players we saw on that match day as well.
Yeah, gloating the Jules is very fair. He was once again brilliant in this game, and the Suarez goal was actually a work of art, a really good bit of team play and continual running from Suarez to make the space, and it was Jules' pass to make it 2-0, and he also assisted the opening goal as well. So, yep, Borkum now level on points with Kiel and Hamburg, who hosted Greuther Fürth in what was a very important game. Fürth with the opportunity to make it a 4-team battle within that space. Couldn't do so. Hamburg were really in control of this game, but couldn't find a way through. They did have a goal disallowed for offside thanks to the video assistant referee, although it was very, very tight. It was fair to say, if you looked at the socials, that a lot of Hamburg fans in the German social media anyway were very unpleased with the result, despite the fact they were playing a team that was in the top four, not some team in the Oberliga. But yeah, it was probably clear they should have won, but resolute defending by Fürth, just doing enough.
Yeah, the funny thing is that everyone thought, okay, this is definitely a game that's not going to end nil all. Well, we were all wrong. But I would really agree with you. Hamburg was better. I mean, of course, they should have won this, at least when Ernst was sent off. Although you have to say this was a joke. In my opinion, you can't really give a second yellow for that. For that foul at all. But so that means that Ernst and Sigwin will be out for the Kiel game. What I mentioned before. You have to say that Fürth really had problems with HSV's left side. So, for example, with Kitter, you could see that as soon as Hamburg got a bit dangerous, got into that Fürth half in general or in the box, that it was mainly because of Kitter. So they had problems with him there. But in general, when Hamburg got dangerous, except that goal that was taken away offside, of course, Borchardt was there. Good game by him, in my opinion, as well. But yeah, I do understand the anger of some Hamburg fans, because you should have won that, especially if you look that Kiel and Bochum won as well. But in the end, they didn't lose that game, and I think that's one of the most important things from that match day for them. They wasn't against Fürth, even if they're one man down, very tough side to beat. So, yeah, in the end, they should have deserved 3 points, but at least they didn't lose.
Yeah, and that, I guess that's the takeaway. And, you know, I've gotten my notes to mention about Sascha Stegemann, who didn't particularly officiate the game particularly well, and was worthy of his criticism. A lot of soft fouls were, you know, as you normally see in a game, but there was a lot that he could have let go. And I think the red card, I'm assuming it's the motion. If anything, it kind of looks like, I guess it looks like a stomping motion. But of course, you know, Hunt doing his Oscar nomination chances, no harm. But yeah, I think it's a good result for Hamburg. Oh, sorry, not for Hamburg, for Fürth, to get the point away from home, especially when you consider their XG was less than 0.2. So yeah, a good result for them. Boyska, again, superb. He's one of the league's best, and for good reason, and he showed it once again on that day. As is Martin Mannel, who should get all the plaudits in the world. They might not have won Erzgebirge Aue, losing 2-0 at Heidenheim, but he played some game. He played a hell of a game. And we saw Mannel Riemann save one penalty, but Mannel decided, if you can do that, I can do better. And he saved two penalties in the first half. He saved the initial penalty from Dennis Tomala, and then the preceding corner was scored by Patrick Mica. And then midway through the first half, it was Christian Kulvetter's turn to be thwarted by the brilliance of Martin Mannel. Tim Kleinitz got the second goal for Heidenheim in stoppage time. His third of the season, already making an impression. It was already hard for Auer going down to 10 men after the Breitzkreuz second yellow, which the penalty was saved by Manuel. But it would be fair to say that they were very fortunate to not lose this game by a lot more if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, if you look at the XGs here, it's 4.54 to 0.58. So... Well, I mean, I think Auer had their first shot and only shot on target after 88 minutes. And I mean, they weren't always one man down in that game. Not a good performance by Auer. This is kind of the Auer we knew away from home. So not really surprising here. Really, really good win for Heidenheim, of course. Although they really have to practice scoring from the spot. As you've mentioned, Kleindienst getting his third goal, although really unselfish action by Schnatterer in that position. He could have taken the shot himself, but passed over to Kleindienst in that situation, which I thought was a really good sign of sportsmanship in that game. For Mannel, he might be a bit sore that they didn't at least get a point with him saving two penalties. I mean, he saved, if I'm correct, 7 out of the last 12 penalties against Auer, which is really, really good. But yeah, in general, not a good performance by Auer at all. As mentioned, not a shot on target before, shortly after the game was coming to an end. Really want to point out that, for example, Sessa was one of the best players for me for Heidenheim in that game. He had the most key passes. He had a couple of shots on target as well. So he was one player to look out for maybe in the future.
He is someone that Heidenheim are very keen on. And we saw that if we go all the way back to the relegation playoff, the first leg where he was a surprise starter, which means that, you know, if you can assume, Frank Schmidt is very, very keen on what he brings to the table. And, you know, he's had his good moments. He was very good, as even mentioned on the weekend. But he's had some moments where he didn't cover himself in glory. So he's got talent. There's no question about it. It's just getting that consistency and just continuously performing. In terms of the table, Heidenheim now in eighth, hour dropping to ninth. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we're going to look at the final three games, and we're going to start with Jahn Regensburg and Fortuna Düsseldorf. Fortuna Düsseldorf were looking to end their skid when they travelled to Jahn Regensburg on match day 21. And they didn't really impress early on in this game and were behind just before half time when David Otto, on loan from Hoffenheim, previously of Heidenheim, got his first goal of the season. A much better second half showing from Fortuna, Keenan Karaman getting his seventh goal of the campaign, and the points were shared. Hard way to start here, Eva. It's really kind of putting Düsseldorf out of the picture altogether now. They're 9 points adrift from the top three, 6 points away from Fürth. They're winless in their last five after that spell where they looked unbeatable. They've kind of almost reverted to the team that is maybe a bit too passive and just can't find a way to break down teams that they should be able to beat.
Yeah, I mean, they had the opportunity to get the win. I think Danso was it with that shot 10 minutes before the end. But in general, that game, in my opinion, didn't really deserve a winner. And as you've mentioned, this basically means all have gone for promotion, which also means all have gone that correct guessings in my table of the season are correct. So good job, Fortuna. Thank you for that. No, but I wasn't impressed by Fortuna that game. Thought Jahn were, in general, the better team in the first half. And, yeah, towards the end, both sides tried to score that golden goal, you can say, but not with a lot of effort. So deserved, like, that typical draw, you could say. But yeah, for Fortuna, I don't know where they went wrong. So you could say that they're maybe the opposite side of what St. Pauli is doing at the moment. So around Christmas time, they were in a very good spot also a bit after that. But then, you had the feeling they were kind of, you're riding on that high and we're thinking that the rest will go easy. They can already plan for another season of Zweite Bundesliga. Will be interesting to see whether this one will be with or without Uwe Rösler. Might be an interesting path for Fortuna on the road. And for Regensburg, I think it's a good point against Fortuna. They settle in that mid-table somehow, and I think that's where they're going to end in the end as well.
Yeah, and a big part, I think we've spoken about goalkeepers, Manu, Riemann, Kevin Müller, you know, and a keeper that has probably fallen through the cracks of the discussion is Alexander Meyer, who's having a fantastic season. He's equal, I think, the best in the, or he might be second in clean sheets for the season with 8, and he was good again when required. And yeah, I think he again played a big part in Regensburg getting a point. I think for the duration, I felt that Regensburg were probably maybe more likely to getting the win, but you know, as you said, I do agree. The sharing of the points was a fair representation of the game. Let's move to two sides that desperately needed to get back to winning ways. I speak of Darmstadt and Osnabrück. Osnabrück entered this game on the back of 6 consecutive defeats. Darmstadt, well, it's been so-so, but they got the win in the end. Matthias Onsak getting his second goal of the campaign, his first since match day 1 against Sandhausen. It was a good performance from Darmstadt. They did enough in the end. Osnabrück pressed hard to get an equaliser, and Mark Heider looked to have done so, but Marcel Schoen with an excellent outstretched glove save to ensure De Lilien got a crucial 3 points. But what it meant was it was the end of the road for Marco Grutter. 7 consecutive defeats, and his time up in Osnabrück is over, which is a bit of a shame because the start of the season it looked all so well, and Osnabrück were in a really, really good position. But yeah, it's really hard to defend a manager when they go on such a slump like they have.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I feel very sorry for Marco Grutter because, as you mentioned, they started off the season quite well, quite to a surprise, all of people, including me. But, I mean, in this game, a point was possible, but Marcel Schoen was just superb in goal. And was very difficult to get past him in this game. I mean, he saved all four shots on target. I mean, Kuhn wasn't bad on the other side as well. That goal really was a defending mistake by Maurice Trapp, in my opinion. Doesn't put any pressure on Darmstadt at all in that situation. For Osnabrück, they really need to change things up a bit, because this was a very vital game for them. And I said this before, Dimitri Gamotzes is one of the coaches I would like to see at Osnabrück, because I think he would be fit to do the job there, to just bring back what Osnabrück needs in general. But of course, we don't know whether Gamotzes wants to return anyway, but he would be one of the coaches I would really, really like to see back in the Zweite Liga, because he's done a really good job at Darmstadt. And I do think out of the two sides that are looking for coaches at the moment, Osnabrück would be the club I would like to see him a tiny bit more.
It is interesting. I don't think it would be the club he would end up at. I still think there is another team that may have that kind of bigger club appeal. But I guess it depends if that team is able to win on the weekend or not. Then maybe they will be forced to make a change. What it means for Osnabrück is that they still have the 4-point cushion, despite the fact that they've lost 7 consecutive games. Sandhausen have, you know, they've lost 3 of the last 5. Braunschweig, 4 of the last 5. Würzburg, 4 of the last 5. So they still have the cushion. They've got a good goal difference comparatively to Sandhausen, Braunschweig and Würzburg, but it's only a matter of time. They have to start picking up points. Florian Fulland will be the caretaker for the moment. At the time of recording this, there is going to be a press conference on the Wednesday with club president, potentially talking about what they are going to be doing for the nearest future. Let's move on to our final game. It was Hanover and Paderborn, Friday night fixture that wielded no goals. It was a pretty even match. Both sides had some pretty good chances. One thing that was very evident was the desperation in defending. A lot of bodies on the line. It was a very good attitude to the game. As a result, both teams keeping the clean sheet. I think Vidant, for me anyway, had the best chance of the game, a one-on-one with Zingula and Leopold, who I believe is staying on at Paderborn for another few seasons, making a very, very good save. Not a lot to talk about this game. You know, Hannover could have really used the 3 points to just keep themselves, like Karlsruhe, just on the edge. But they couldn't do so. Well, Paderborn, you know, it's a good point for them away in what has been a very uncharacteristic season for them.
Yeah, I mean, if we talk about chances that weren't used, Sribini in the beginning of the game, definitely as well. In general, you could say about that game that the first half was top, the second half not that much. The second half wasn't really pretty to watch at all. There were not a lot of chances. The game was mainly played in midfield, and because of that, I think neither side really deserved a point here. Similar to 3 points, sorry. Similar to the Düsseldorf Regensburg game, but for Hannover, again, similar to Fortuna, they needed to pick up a win in this match around, especially if you look at all the other teams that are picking up points in those top four, top five. I mean, we spoke about Karlsruhe. This is one of the games they want to win. Didn't really put enough pressure on Paderborn to do so. So that might be their promotion hopes gone as well.
Yep. That's also me out of the running, it would seem, in terms of predicting who would go top of the league. But, I think their disappointment has been that they're just too hot and cold, Hannover. The lack of consistency throughout the season so far has proved to be detrimental. They've dropped some points in games that they should have won. It's crazy to talk about a team that's currently sitting in the top six, but I think the expectation with the squad they have and some of the players in particular, like a Haraguchi, Dukes is still a quality player, Essa between the sticks. It is Timo Hubers who's emerged to be their best defender at the moment. It's been a pretty disappointing campaign after 21 matches. That's it for another episode of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We thank you for joining us. We do apologize for being a little bit late, but the main thing is that Eva is doing well and we're doing well. And we will be back again next week to discuss all the action from match day 22 from Eva and myself. We hope you have a great weekend and we'll see you soon.